ESPN College Football Podcast, hosted by Booger McFarland and Kevin Agande.
It is Wednesday, November 24th. Welcome to the College Football Podcast. Kevin Agande here with you. Before we get into college football and talking with Booger McFarland, plus a pop-in with a very special guest, I want to give a shout-out to Dick Vitale last night. Welcome back. Love seeing him. Love the emotion of the beginning as he continues his fight and dealing with chemo against cancer. For him to broadcast the Gonzaga UCLA game with energy and just it's just great to see. And Dave O'Brien is a phenomenal play-by-play guy and partner on the broadcast. Just a great job and warm my heart, I think, for a lot of people that watch college football, for just a lot of people that just love Dick Vitale and know what the sport means to him. We love you, Dick. Keep fighting because I know it's just one small little battle as you continue because there's a long, tough road ahead. It's just great to get a win yesterday and to see you back on the air. Before we talk to Booger, two things I do want to mention. First, watch NBA Today, Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific on ESPN, the ESPN app, or listen to the show wherever you listen to your podcast, as well as listen to the Woj Pod. My man, Adrian Wojnarowski this week is talking to Michael Wilbon about the Wizards and their revival. Bradley Beal, what star players really want right now in this day and age. That's the Woj Pod. Listen wherever you get your podcast. Now it's time for Booger McFarland and a very special guest that we all know and love. Enjoy. All right, so day after the rankings. And this one seems, it's so funny. Cincinnati's in it, Boog, in the top four. First time we've seen somebody from the group of five crashing in the top four since the start of the playoff rankings. This one seems less controversial than anything we've seen before. Georgia number one, Ohio State number two, Alabama number three, Cincinnati number four, Michigan at five, Notre Dame at six, and then you got the Pokes sitting there at Oklahoma State at number seven with one of the big games of the weekend, Bedlam and Oklahoma coming to Stillwater. What are your first impressions about Ohio State jumping over Alabama and then Cincinnati cracking the top four?
Well, I'll give you credit because on Saturday, when you and I did our rankings on the show and you just obliterated the iPad on national television, you had Ohio State at number two. So I got to give you a lot of credit, not for the iPad, but for actually putting them up there because their performance was really impressive. And I think what the committee saw is the same thing that you saw. It's a defense that's gotten better, an offense that looks unstoppable right now. And they're really not even using Travion Henderson. Well, you know, I think he's the best running back in American, he and Bijan Robinson. But C.J. Stroud, man, like you see a quarterback that from the beginning of the season until now has improved so much. He was throwing balls 5 feet over receivers' head, Kev. Now he is the front runner for the Heisman in my mind based on what he's done. And the trio of receivers with Smith and Jigba, Olave, Garrett Wilson, like those guys are absolutely outstanding. And so I think the committee just saw and they were wowed by the performance and said, okay, yeah, if you guys are going to look like this, I think you're the second best team in the country. And as far as Cincinnati, this is a good step, right? Like Cincinnati into the top four. Yes, it's not the final poll, but this is the first time ever, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, that a group of five team has even been in the top four at any point, correct?
It is. It is. I brought that up. Whoa!
What's up?
Oh, what's wow. That? Wow, we got cameos now?
Let's go.
Look who's crashing the party here on the Wednesday podcast. It is Joey Galloway, all smiles with his Wimbledon second place runner-ups behind him, those little dishes. Great to have you join us, Joey.
Thanks for having me, Kev. I appreciate you hosting me, Kev, since we can't do our Thursday. Actually, since you can't do your Thursday podcast where you have me on as a guest, I appreciate you let me come in with you and Book.
Joey's joining us, of course, because of, you know, tomorrow's Thanksgiving. Book, do you notice what Joey's flaunting there? Now, our listeners cannot see it. He's got his own logo. Joey's created his own logo. There's a Joey G golf logo.
So here's the thing that I would say. it's kind of like if a tree falls in the woods and nobody's there, it doesn't make a sound. If you have your own logo and nobody wears it but you, is it really a logo?
Fair point. Can we buy those? Can we buy those hats that you're trying to stunt there with us on camera?
Hey, Kev, this is very exclusive gear. I don't know that we make it extra small for you, so we can't get that. And I don't know that we got a double X and chubby for Boog. So it's right in that mid-range where you and Boog somehow missed the sizes we provide, Kev.
It's giving out the guys that get bogeys and break their clubs on the course and miss birdies constantly on putts. Oh, they have a rag in there on the side of their pants. That's what it is. It's exclusive.
Maybe I've missed this, but have you guys discussed who's in line for an LSU job?
No, we haven't. But since you bring it up, it's amazing that LSU was the second school to have the opening of the major school. I think USC was first. Mm-hmm. Then LSU came, and now all the people that were rumored to go to those two schools are starting to get 10-year extensions. When you look at James Franklin, you look at Mel Tucker, rumored to have a 10-year extension. Then Dan Mullen gets let go. Now the Florida's job is open. Joe, I don't know about you, Joey, but I think that USC and LSU are teetering on that line of disaster, because they've had basically 4 to 6 weeks to figure out what coach they want. And the fact that they are to the end of their season and they don't have a guy in mind right now, it's really starting to look like a disaster.
Starting to look like a disaster is being kind, Boog. And that's why I asked, because I knew you would try your best to paint a much better picture for LSU than it actually is. At this time, LSU is sitting out there with an open coaching vacancy, mm-hmm. and we have nobody. We don't have people lining up for that job. USC, same class. I agree, you put both of them in there.
Right.
But it is crazy to think they make a move mid-season, mm-hmm. and there's nothing. You guys have nobody. What does that say about a program that won a national championship a couple years back? Now, USC is a different situation. They've been down for a while, haven't mattered for a while. We're talking about LSU, who won the national championship a couple years back. The guys that won that championship at LSU are in the NFL balling right now. And right. Now your program is at a stage where you can't get a coach. You might as well be Temple.
Well, I'm not going to say LSU can't get a coach until we see who they hire.
Because you can get one.
As far as we know, Scott Woodard, the AD, has something in his back pocket. I don't know all the rumors out there, but we'll see. I do know this. I can guarantee you this. They will have a coach by Monday or Tuesday. Now, who that coach will be, I have no idea. But I think we need to reserve judgment on whether or not it is a total failure until you see who that hire is. I would say that. Will you grant me that?
Yeah, but you have to have a coach by Monday because of the early recruiting period, right? I mean, that's bearing down. That's right around the corner. I mean, and the names are Aranda, Fickell, Campbell, Cristobal. But how about Billy Napier? What do you think, Boog, of a guy that has the roots in the state, especially his name now being popped around with Florida? Like, what are your impressions of this short list? Because James Franklin was the big target in the conversations with LSU and USC. Then suddenly he gets a 10-year extension, with a 67-32 record at Penn State. And let me tell you, that fan base is kind of lukewarm, and their first reaction is 10 years? But I always say, who are you going to replace James Franklin when he is an outstanding recruiter? Who's the next guy? Well, who's the guy do you think should be taking over the LSU program?
So I'm going to give Joey the James Franklin angle because he knows that footprint a little bit better and knows how James Franklin fit. I'll let him comment on that. As far as the Billy Napier, here's what I can tell you about Napier. Napier may not be a name around the country, but he is a program builder. He is a culture builder. He's won 9 or 10 games at Louisiana, which he's basically getting the second or third tier talent in the state. And he's built the program there. He's got NFL talent that's going to the NFL, the starting running back for the 49ers. Elijah Mitchell. So Napier is a very, very good head coach who believes in some elements of the spread, but also some physicality and power football. I like Billy Napier. Again, I'm not making it higher. The powers that be that are making the hires that hired LSU, it sounds like they're looking for a proven Power Five name. And if that's the case, then Billy Napier is going to be at the bottom of that list. Now, Florida, from what I was told, Florida interviewed Billy Napier earlier in the week. So Florida is even on Billy Napier. I don't know where that's going to go. Florida is also on Lane Kiffin. I just know Billy Napier is a good football coach. And I think at some point he's going to get a bigger job. Why not LSU as far as a shoe-in? I don't know. I thought, Joey, that James Franklin was a fit at USC because he wouldn't necessarily have fit at Penn State, but Penn State thought otherwise. Now, how do you think he fits there?
I think he's done a terrific job at Penn State. I think he's a really good coach that I thought would take a look at USC, and I thought he would take a look at LSU. You talk Billy Napier, you're talking about a guy that builds programs. It's interesting to me that LSU is in that class. And that's what I'm saying about your situation. You guys are now looking at a guy that builds programs, that has, you just named one running back that's in the NFL. I think, or I thought before this, that LSU was one of those places that, let's just say Ohio State, Ryan Day leaves Ohio State. Ohio State's yeah. not going to look at a person that builds a program. They're going to go look at a person that has been at that level, that has won games, that understands how to come in and continue a winning process, not necessarily a builder of what you're looking for. James Franklin has proven that he can win. Now, I don't know if you've been to Penn State. Kev, you may have been since yep. you're a Pennsylvania guy. Mm-hmm. There's not much there.
Yep. Happy Valley's quiet. It's in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. What you're selling at Penn State is Penn State, the school.
And ice cream.
Nothing else. So if you can recruit to places like that, you are an outstanding recruiter. If you can find a way to win in places like that, you're a darn good coach. So I think a guy like James Franklin would fit in a lot of different places. And you're right, but I'll hold judgment to see who you guys hire in the end. But to this point, as we sit here today, it's been a disaster.
Can you say, though, with Billy Napier, He's a guy that they need stability, right? That LSU's right now to this point where they're just, we need stability. We need a guy we know who's going to be there, who's going to add stability and relationships in Louisiana. Like you said, in previous podcasts, the last three coaches have won national championships just because the talent. I mean, you go 50 miles in the radius around that school, you're getting 4 and 5 star guys left and right.
Right, Kev. It's kind of like you and I talked about, and Joey may agree with this. I think he will. To me, there are three schools in America that you really have to be a dumb to screw it up. Okay. Three schools, because their footprint allows you to recruit within a 50-mile radius and get all the talent you need. LSU, Ohio State, and Georgia. And you don't have any competitors. Now, no disrespect to Georgia Tech, but they are not a competitor to Georgia. So those three schools have an advantage on the rest of the country. So, yeah, when we talk about culture in LSU, Coach Orgeron, he won a national title along with Miles and Saban, but Ed O got too high on the horse and he fell off. And when he fell off, they had to unravel. But don't get it twisted, Joey Galloway. LSU is not broken. It's just a little sideways. I would be willing to bet you any amount of money that mattered to you, whoever the next coach is during his tenure, will win a national championship, because that's how much talent is in that state. So it's not broken. It's just off the rails a little bit, Galloway.
Here's what I'd say, Book, and I actually like what you said about LSU and the talent, Georgia and the talent, Ohio. I would say 10 years ago, Ohio, absolutely, within a 50-mile radius, all the talent you needed. Now Ohio has to go get some Florida kids, get some California kids, get some other kids to bolster that talent. Now, here's the thing, Book. To say that you're a little off the rails 2 years after winning a national championship, that's a lot off the rails. It isn't like this is a situation where you guys was bad. You're not Temple, like I said.
Why am I catching strays? Why multiple times? I mean, I don't need to catch strays.
I mean, this is your podcast.
That's because.
Yeah, but why is the gun coming towards me?
Because Bull tries to act like he's Miami. You know what I mean? He's not. Not a program that had some success a long time ago and been bad. He's not a Temple who's been bad forever.
Again,
this is 2 years after winning a national championship. You don't have your choice with all of that talent. But it's not a secret the amount of talent that is there, not just on the team, but right around there that you can get. Right. To not have your choice of any coach anywhere is further off the rails than you would like to have us believe.
Well, I would say to that is that whoever gets the job at LSU, it's going to be an 8 to 10 year job. You're going to be getting very similar money that these guys are getting around the country. It's going to be 10 years, $100 million. So we're going to get the guy ultimately that we want. I just don't know who that is based on the Scott Woodard who's making the hire. Only he knows that.
You don't hear that kind of money. You do not go.
Who says we're getting Billy Napier? I'm just throwing out names.
He's the only name that we have discussed.
I think Dave Aranda's name, though, like, is a name, especially
Dave Aranda, USC.
Right.
If Dave Aranda wants the USC job, I think he gets it. I don't know about you, Galloway, but I think with his ties there, I think there are two names that stick out of USC. Dave Aranda and Eric Bieniemy, if they're willing to wait on Bieniemy.
I like that. Bieniemy is a different story. And again, as we talk about coaching and opportunity, I've said numerous times that coaching is a place that there have been guys held back for I don't know why. A guy like Bieniemy, who has been in Kansas City around that success, all of a sudden it's like he doesn't call the plays. But we don't have those same conversations about other offensive coordinators have gone on to get head coaching jobs. Was Sean McVay calling the plays in Washington?
You can go right to Kansas City. Doug Peterson wasn't calling the plays. Brad Childress wasn't calling the plays. Andy was always calling the plays, but it's used in the Eric Bieniemy conversation, but not with Doug and not with Brad, right?
Yeah. And these guys have gone on to get opportunities that the same things haven't held them back. And the only reason that you start to look at these things and say, well, what could that possibly be besides Eric Bieniemy is black? Because I don't know what else there could be, because we see it continually where these guys go on and leave places because they're associated with a guy and go on and get bigger and better opportunities.
Right.
And then you don't see it in certain cases. I don't know what else that could be.
Yeah. You know what? I think you said a mouthful, and I definitely agree with you on that, which is why I think that if you're a USC, if you're LSU, just look at the candidates that have been in this cycle. The people that we have all read about: Mel Tucker, black man; James Franklin, black man; Dave Aranda, Eric Bieniemy. These are all people of color. So to your point, Joey, yes, it's been that way. But I find a little bit of solace in the fact that this cycle, we're starting to hear a lot more African-American names in this cycle on the college level. And the NFL level is totally different. But on the college level, this cycle of who's open and who's been there, to me, has been dominated by the African-American coach, which is a good thing. Now, none of them have changed schools yet. But for James Franklin to get a 10-year extension, for Mel Tucker, 2 years after leaving Colorado, I'm not going to say it was a disaster, but Colorado didn't have the best record. And now he's on the up
till this year.
Exactly. For him to get a 10-year extension rumored, to me, we're making progress on the college level. The NFL is a little different.
I agree with you, but when you say we're making progress, we're accepting progress as these are the names we're hearing. That is crazy that at this stage in 2021, progress looks like, well, here's the names we're hearing. We haven't heard of one hire, one move. We're talking about the names we're hearing. That to me is not progress. It's ridiculous that that's part of this conversation.
You're right. You're right. Maybe we're a year or two away from hearing Marcus Freeman's name, right? The DC at Notre Dame, great recruiter. Shoot, we could hear it soon because Brian Kelly's name has always been kind of a hot name, potentially at USC. We haven't even touched base on that Florida opening. We've got a lot to cover here. I'm glad we could kind of delve into the conversation with head coaches, but let's talk about the games too that are coming up this weekend. And the one that circle with, of course, Joey joining us, Ohio State, Michigan. You know, since Ryan Day took over, they have dominated 149-86 in those three wins. They didn't play last year because of COVID within the Michigan program. You know, everybody knows what Ohio State can do. I want to hear you make the case on why Michigan can make this a close game. What must they have to do, especially starting with that defensive front?
Well, here's the thing I look at, Kev, is that everyone says, let's blitz Ohio State and play man-to-man coverage. Well, guess what? Their receivers are better than your DBs because you don't have three NFL caliber corners on your team. Like, not many teams have that. So you're going to lose that matchup. The way I would play Ohio State is really simple. Yeah, you got to mix it up a little bit, but I'm going to major in allowing my two defensive ends, okay? I'm going to allow 55 and 97 and whoever else we roll into this defensive line to get after the quarterback. That's where we're going. And if my two top 15 draft pick defensive ends can have a day against Ohio State's offensive line, and I can drop back seven, I can keep two safeties back, I can make sure that if we do die, we die death by paper cuts and not by somebody just taking a shotgun and shooting it through our chest. That's the way I'm going to play this game. Jim Harbaugh has to coach this game understanding that he doesn't have the most explosive team. So this game comes down to how you want to, are you willing to win the game a certain way and not lose it a certain way? Because Harbaugh can come out and say, okay, I'm going to try to go score for score with Ohio State. He can't win that battle. Like, this has to be a battle of field position, power football, running the ball, ball control. I think that's the way Michigan wins this game. And if they can do that, if the tempo of the game favors Michigan, I like Michigan in the game. Mm. If the tempo favors Ohio State, here's what I mean by tempo. If this game is in the 40s, Ohio State wins. If this game is in the 20s, I think Michigan wins.
And you're talking about Hutchinson and Ojabo on the ends. Mike McDonald's done a great job, the DC, in adjusting game to game here. Boog, you're making your case, and Joey's shaking his head the whole time. I do want to go back to one thing. The strength of Michigan is playing keep away, right? With Haskins controlling the time of possession, Blake Corum's ankle, we'll see if he's ready to go. Joey, you don't think they could sustain that keep away against Ohio State as you shake your head?
Well, the idea of keep away, Kevin, and I think people don't really understand the idea of keep away. Keep away only works if you score. You can have a ball, and we see it all the time with these, like Ole Miss. We're going to a game. The opponent will have the ball for 30 more minutes than Ole Miss, but Ole Miss will end up winning by 21. Because if you have the ball and you score, doesn't matter how long you have it. So this keep away idea has to result in points or you're in trouble. And that's why, that's why you play like an army or somebody. You know what I mean? And they keep the ball and they go on these 15 play drives, they score a touchdown. You're like, now we're in trouble because we're not going to get the ball. So I don't think that there is an advantage in Michigan's favor at any level of this game.
Joey, help me understand though. Because Boog brought this up with the pressure. So you could have seven back. It really comes down to your front four winning the line of scrimmage if they can apply pressure. And you got two guys that are going to be playing on Sundays, first-round picks right there, and Ojabo and Hutchinson. How does C.J. Stroud, what you see, how does he handle, hey, listen, man, we can complete 70 to 80% of our passes if we have time and we have those three receivers. How does he handle pressure? What have you seen in handling pressure?
He hasn't been great at handling pressure, but he hasn't seen a whole lot of pressure. So, but like Boog is saying, if you got four down and seven back, obviously any offensive coordinator is going to then run the football. And so it literally becomes, what do you want to do here? Do you want to let them run the ball and hope that you can get a couple stops? Or take your chances. And that is the game of football. That's exactly what it is. You have to pick and choose and figure out when is the best time to take your chances. And in those moments, however many of those moments come up, the more of those moments you can win. We took our chance. We sent a blitz. We didn't get home. They hurt us. We took our chance. We sent a blitz. We did get home. We hurt them. That'll be the difference here in this game. I don't see whether this game is 20 something to 40 something. I think the key is going to be, can somebody make CJ Stroud uncomfortable in what, because he's been absolutely unbelievable these last five, 6 games. But at the same time, it has been against, for example, a Michigan State team that is absolutely the worst in pass defense in the history of college football. So that's easy to do.
All right, so we do a couple things. On Wednesdays, we do Boog's DEFCON, and then on Thursdays, we do Joey's picks. Let's get to the DEFCON right now, Boog. Who you got?
Well, first and foremost, Kev, I got to put the Stanford Cardinal on DEFCON. DEFCON 2 for the Stanford Cardinal.
DEFCON 2.
Kev, I'm just wondering where the Stanford Cardinal go. David Shaw has been there a long time. And if you haven't looked up how much money David Shaw makes, Kev, he makes about $9 million. Mm. All right. One of the highest paid coaches in the country yet. And still the way he wants to win at Stanford is falling behind times. They're not running the spread. They're lining up with 7 tight ends on the field. Like, I don't know who has more tight ends on the field, Illinois or Stanford. Okay. I mean, it's offensive linemen and tight end everywhere. And ever since that Oregon game, they haven't been able to adjust and move forward. I just wonder where this Stanford program is headed. Notre Dame is coming to town. It could get ugly against Notre Dame. I don't know if David Shaw's job is in jeopardy. I don't think so. But where do they go? Because there was once a time when Stanford was a legitimate New Year's Six Bowl contender. We have reached a time they are so far from that. So I just wonder, Kev, where is the future of the Stanford program, specifically led by David Shaw?
They got 3 wins on the season. They're 19.5-point dogs at home on the farm. And, you know, the one thing they could tout each and every week was, hey, we beat Oregon. Well, that's not holding up after what we saw from Oregon over the weekend in Salt Lake City. All right, you got another team on there. Who you got?
Yes, the University of Southern California, DEFCON 1. Well, and this is a continuation of the conversation we had earlier talking about USC and LSU. Like, it's getting late early, okay? The season's not over, but it is getting late right now because you were the first team amongst the Power Five to fire your head coach, and you have no head coach in place, nor has anybody really been rumored. At least LSU has had rumors. I haven't heard any rumors with USC. So where does USC go? You have Heisman Trophy winner after Heisman Trophy winner after Heisman Trophy winner. You can run the state of California, but you continue to allow Oregon to come in and take your talent. Other schools like Arizona State are coming in and taking your talent. And there doesn't seem to be an end in sight, nor do you have a coach that can stop it. James Franklin, I thought, would have been a perfect fit, but he signs a 10-year deal in Happy Valley. So I just wonder where the mighty Trojans, the mighty Troy, fight on, all that stuff that Keyshawn and those guys say. Where does USC go, Kev? Because it seems like right now in the hierarchy of the Pac-12, a team that was once number one during the Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush era, Kev, I don't know if they – I mean, you got Oregon, Arizona State. I mean, there are other programs you would put. They are kind of a middle of the pack. Pac-12 team, and I thought I'd never say that about USC.
Yeah, and they got BYU in town, and they're 7-point dogs. Kalani Sitake should get his name tossed around for bigger jobs. If I'm USC, I'm giving Brian Kelly a lifetime contract. I'm saying, whatever we got to do, come over here, especially when you look at the recruiting talent that they're bringing in, as Joey shakes his head. But CJ Stroud, Bryce Young, Matt Corral, all ties to Southern
Avon
California.
Thibodeau.
Thibodeau, all tied. Those guys should not be leaving the area. They should just be going straight to USC, and then you get dominated by Chip and UCLA over the weekend. I mean, Joe, you want to weigh in here, aside from us looking at your logo as you lean in the camera?
All I'm saying is, Kev, how in the world USC got in this conversation without LSU? That's
Wait, we just did 20 minutes of LSU. No. What do you want us to do?
No, I'm saying they did not make the DEF CON, whatever. Taylor, can you run the DEF CON thing back for me, please? Can I get a DEF CON? DEF CON 1. Thank you. Every single thing that Boog just said about USC, you could say the same about LSU. DEFCON 1.
You're having too much fun with this, which is great. But again, we just spent 20 minutes. And by the way, he's put Mac on DEFCON. He's put North Carolina on DEFCON. In previous weeks, he's put LSU on DEFCON. We've done all that.
Okay. Hey, I'm only here once. I need to hear DEFCON 1 for LSU 2. Let's go.
DEFCON 1. All right, Taylor, that's enough, okay? Taylor, that's enough. That's enough, seriously. All right, that's too many.
All right, it's time for Boog to have some fun because I picked up two games on you, Joey, from last week. I picked up two games, and we are now even. We are even heading into the final week of the regular season. We're both 40-46-1 against the spread.
Where are we at on Temple? Are you not counting Temple?
No, we don't do that. Come on, we do this every week. No, the audience doesn't want to hear about that. So let's get to our games, all right? And Boog, I want you to weigh in as well. I want your picks as well. So, Taylor, we ready to go?
Joey and Kevin's Weekly Locks.
Let's start with the Egg Bowl, and that is Thanksgiving night. And obviously, a couple of years ago, showmanship after a touchdown and a dog deciding to urinate move on the end zone created two coaches to lose their job. And now we've got two high explosive offenses coming in. Number 9, Ole Miss at Mississippi State. The dogs are favored by 1.5. Will Rogers, the last two games, 11 touchdowns. Who you got in this? Let's start with you, Joey.
I like Ole Miss. As much as I like Will Rogers, and as much as I think this game, I wish we were picking the over under in this one, because I think this is going to be a fun game to watch, which they always are. Somehow Mississippi State and Ole Miss, no matter who they play, it's a really fun game that comes down to the end. But I'm going to stick with Ole Miss. I think Matt Corral outduels Will Rogers in this one.
Well, who you got? And by the way, this is not straight up. We're talking points, too. Are you taking Ole Miss in the points or Mississippi State laying the points?
Well, I'm going to take Mississippi State because Mike Leach and Will Rogers are hot as fish grease right now. Like, they are rolling. Whatever level of mastery of this offense you have to achieve after so many games, I think Will Rogers is there. He's been throwing for 400 yards. Like, Galloway runs with parachutes, like, often. And to me, that's the reason I'm going with Will Rogers, Mike Leach. They get the upset. Ole Miss has improved their defense, but by no means is it great. And I think Mike Leach takes advantage of it.
Man, this is a tough one. And Joey loves when I sit there on the fence. But I'm going with Ole Miss here, too, on the road. I think Lane wins this game in a phenomenal environment. Again, Thanksgiving night on ESPN. So,
by the way, Kev, I don't mean to switch the subject in the middle of picks. I just keep staring at Joey's logo. And even though, like, if we got a Rhodes Scholar to look at the logo, I'm not really sure they could tell you what it is.
I see a G, but I don't understand
it. It's a triangle with a bunch of lines.
Is that your number? Is that a 7-2? Did you find a way to incorporate a number that we have no idea is affiliated with you?
Hey, Kev, I appreciate what you did there. You tried not to make Boog sound like he has no sense whatsoever. You know it's a G with a 7. So you...
I have no idea.
I know. You don't know, Boog. I know you have no sense. You went to LSU. But Kev was trying to be nice.
He wasn't trying to be nice. He was being honest.
Is that a 7? Kev, you know what it is. It's a G with a 7.
I didn't know you were affiliated with 7. Like, you wore 7 in college, but did you wear 7? Evan, and what'd you wear in the pros? You can't wear single digits in the pros. So what, you were like a 81? What were you, an 80? What
he was
you went 13 with the Patriots, right? 13.
Hey, Book, has anybody sounded more further away from being an athlete than Kev did right there? I mean, Kev is like, so were you associated with 7 or
associated with 7?
Hey, I want to let our audience know. Hey, we're on a text chain. We're on a text chain, and it's been for years. There's no one better. He runs a master class at deflecting on what the topic is than Joey Galloway, because literally I don't think one person can recall what jersey number you've ever worn.
Hey, I know two people on this podcast that know, the bald-headed guy and me. And that's why when you said, so were you associated with seven? Even the bald-headed guy couldn't hold his smile back because he's thinking, what the hell is Kev talking about?
So tell us, is that your jersey number seven? Like, because what were you wearing?
I thought it was a logo of a new plane coming out of G7.
Uh-huh. Oh, so you saw the seven. That's all I needed. That's all I needed. You saw the seven. That's all I needed. What's the name?
Yep. Hey, Kev, you know what the seven stands for? Boog, it's what he cards on every hole. A seven. That's a great point.
Hey, Kev, the last time I saw Joey in seven, he had goggles on. Have you ever seen a football player in the last 20 years wear goggles? Like, who in the hell wears goggles as a wide receiver? That tells you everything about Joey Galloway you need to know.
Here's what it tells you, and Kev probably don't remember this. Boog, you might remember because you were a football fan.
Here comes the
Eric Dickerson. Eric Dickerson used to wear goggles.
What do you mean I don't remember this?
And so I, being a football fan coming up, I will wear kangaroos. Do you know who wore Walter Payton? Thank you. So I wore kangaroos. I wore goggles for Eric Dickerson. I had the tape up my forearms for Kenny Easley. See, I was.
You do that when you're five years old, not when you're at Ohio State.
Dude, you do that when you're a football fan, period. Like, all those things that those dudes did, I was in. Let's go.
Yeah, and for our audience, Joey turned 50 over the weekend, so you got to go a little bit back and look some YouTube clips.
1971.
50, 35, about. Whatever you want to call it.
Because no one knows anything about the ruse. Like, the ruse are old school. That was Walter's jam. All right, let's go to the next game. Number 16, Iowa at Nebraska. Iowa favored by 1.5. Iowa, you know, creating turnovers. That's what they do. Any game that's inside 3 points with Nebraska, I'm going with the opposing team because this team cannot win close games. 8 losses this season combined by 49 points. Every single week, it's a heartbreak. They're in games every single week, and then it's heartbreak because they don't find a way to win. So I'll take Iowa laying the 1.5. Boog, who you got?
I will never, ever bet with Nebraska. Don't trust them. Don't care to bet with them. For whatever reason, I just think they're snake bit, man. Like, you know, the quarterback, Martinez, he's shown some flashes. They don't really have anything they can hang their hat on, Kev. Like, back in the day when Nebraska was Nebraska, it was big physical offensive line, run the football, the black shirts would fly around on defense. The only thing they can hang their hat on right now is, you know, at some point, Martinez is going to turn the football over. Scott Frost is going to have that look on his face like, man, why in the hell did I stay at UCF? And they're going to lose the game. Like, that's the only thing I can count on right now. And as much as I hate to go with Iowa, at least I know Iowa, the defense will create turnovers. They can run the football sometimes with Goodson. And as long as the quarterback remembers they're wearing black jerseys, they'll be okay.
I agree with all that. Scott Frost should have gone to Florida. I am going to take Nebraska here.
Oh, geez.
This is going to be a terrible football game. Iowa's not fun to watch. Nebraska's not fun to watch. You two won't see a snap of this game. I will text you to let you know who won. I'm going to go to Nebraska.
We got TVs in our studio.
This is my job.
Yeah. I don't care what it is. This game ain't watchable. Hey, look, you guys can sit here and pretend like, hey, we watch all the games. Hey, look, some games are unwatchable. This is one of them. But I'm going to go with Nebraska because eventually something has to go your way. You keep getting close and getting close and getting – eventually something got to fall in your favor. Give me Nebraska. Give me Martinez making plays. And give me a terrible Iowa offense that's not going to score any points.
This is why he gets paid the big bucks, his analysis. Eventually something has to go your way. Excellent analysis.
Hey, Kev, it's like eventually – if you look over Joey's right shoulder, that picture of it, and see the towel hanging, eventually he's going to realize that when you go to a nice establishment, you don't wear a towel hanging out of your pants like that. It's just something that you don't do.
Wait, he's got the gloves up there. He's got the gloves in the frame. What was that all about?
Hey, Book. Yes. Would you like to tell Kev what that is before he sounds more and more? Let me tell you what happens, Kev, because I'll bet you Book doesn't have one of these. Book, do you have one of these?
Deflecting.
No, but I think what it is a hole in one.
I think what it is a hole in one.
When did you get a hole in one?
Would you like to take another look at that?
When did you get a hole in one? That's what he's asking.
Yeah, hole in one, baby. Hey, look,
we're not counting putt putt golf in Columbus. When was there a hole in one?
Hey, look, I got a hole in one 3 years ago. I got it framed. I got the flag. I acted like I'd never been anywhere before. I took the flag. I took some grass. I got the ball. I got the flag. The glove. Hey, Book.
Okay, so what was it? Was it par three? Give us the details. Par three, 150 yards. What are we doing?
Hey, Kev. First of all, of course, it's a par three, Kev. That's number one. All right, just stop right there.
How many yards? How many?
No. Stop. Just stop right there. I got to agree with Joy here. When we talk hole in one, and your first question is, was it a par three? The conversation is over. At that point, it's over. It's over. We're not talking golf anymore on here. No more. No more whatsoever.
All right. So Penn State is at Michigan State. Michigan State's, this line has moved back and forth. First, the Nittany Lions were favored by one. Then it went down. You know, Michigan State favored. It's now, at least the latest on Wednesday, Nittany Lions are favored by one. Clifford's expected to be back. They had 35 players out against Rutgers. 21, according to Franklin, were out against Rutgers due to the flu. So we're just going to go with this line right now. Penn State laying the one. Who you got, Joey?
I'm going to go with I'm going to take Kev. I feel like you right now. I'm on the fence on this one. I don't feel good either way, but I'm going to go with Penn State here. I'm going to take Penn State. I think Sean Clifford is going to take advantage of this pass defense of Michigan State that Ohio State enjoyed playing against also, and Penn State's going to win this game.
Well, here's the thing I know. I don't know who's going to win the game, but it's about $200 million that's going to be on each sideline combined between Mel and James. So I just want a
10-year contract bowl.
I mean, it's 20 years and $200 million. Will somebody just give me a loan? Either way, whoever loses this game, I hope it's a close game, because the other side is going to start to say, that guy's worth $100 million?
Like, no, it's one of those, you hope the ink is dry. That's what you hope. Whoever loses this game, let's hope the ink is dry.
Well, I agree. Now, especially for Mel, because I hope the ink was dry for Mel 2 weeks ago before Ohio State hung 50 on him in the first half.
I'm going Michigan State getting the one. So let's move on.
Hold up. Book didn't make a pick.
Book waffled the whole time.
Yes. I'm going with Mel Tucker. I just got to believe Mel Tucker is going to bounce back. I like Michigan State in this one.
Okay. Joey, Book went with the accountants. That's what he did on that.
Exactly. I'm used to Book just talking, not saying
this that. Should be a good one. Number 15, Texas A&M laying 6.5 at LSU in Ed Orgeron's last home game. Where are we going, Book? Where are we going?
Hey, Kev, one of the greatest sayings I've ever heard from Louisiana. It's a poor dog that won't fight in his own backyard, Kev. Hey, give me LSU and the points.
And the points. No, it's not straight up, though. The dog wants the points.
You told me that this is points related, so I'm just
you gave me a phrase and a statement that you guys are going to fight. You're going to fight hard.
So yeah, we are.
Yeah, like we say in Louisiana, give me the points. That's literally what they say in Louisiana. Give me the points.
Hey, if you're offering help, I'll take it.
I'm taking A&M laying the 6.5. Joey, who you got?
Come on, Kev. You already know where I'm going. Whenever LSU and Temple play anybody, give me the other team.
Such a hater. Oh, as a matter of fact, I would love for LSU's next coach to see if we can get the is that a G7 or Gulfstream logo on our jerseys, maybe? You know what I'm saying?
Hey, look, as we say here in Louisiana, give me the points while the poor dog is going to fight. That's what we say in Louisiana. Let's go.
All right, let's get the bedlam here. One of the biggest games, aside from Michigan, Ohio State, Oklahoma State laying the 4 at home against an Oklahoma team that has dominated this series. How about Mike Gundy in 16 meetings at Bedlam, just 2 wins against Oklahoma? And it's the third time in this rivalry that both teams are in the top 10. There's a lot of scenarios out with the Big 12. Joey, who you got in this one?
I like Oklahoma State. In a season where we've seen Oklahoma's offense need to run the ball, and I'm talking when they can't run it, they are bad. Going against Oklahoma State team that's really good on defense, I like Oklahoma State.
If not now, when, Kev? For Oklahoma State and Mike Gundy. Like, this is the team that he's had during that tenure that I think has the best defense. It's one of the better defenses in the Big 12, if not the best. I think them and Baylor have the 2 best defenses in the Big 12. If not now, when? I'm taking Oklahoma State. Sanders has to prove to me, though, that when the game is on the line, he can make a play with his arm down in the red zone to put this team over the top. I believe he can. I like the mullet. Hey, business in the front, party in the back. Let's go, Pokes.
Why are you shaking your head, Joey?
Because Boog is going with my same analogy of Nebraska. Eventually, it got to go in your favor. And as also you can make, if Oklahoma gets to a place where they have to depend on Spencer Sanders to make the plays to win the game, they're not in a good place.
I'm going to rely on one thing, Oklahoma State's defense. What Baylor did a couple weeks ago, that Oklahoma team has not looked the same since. They can't run the football effectively. Yeah, you have 1 or 2 big breaks, but that's it. Like, so to me, Oklahoma State's defense is the surest thing. You can make a case it's the surest thing in the entire conference so far this season. And I trust that more than anything.
Hey, Kev, by the way, I'm just curious. Where exactly are you right now?
Who, me? I'm in a hotel room visiting my family in the Philadelphia suburbs.
Judging by the decor, it's not a Ritz. So I'm just curious.
Oh, heck no. Are you kidding me? It's not a Ritz.
I'm judging by the decor in the background.
I'm staying close to where my mom lives. So I'm in a residence inn. I've got 5 people in this house. I'm just lucky we haven't had any noise. 3 kids are with me on this trip. So, and my wife's done a great job keeping it quiet.
Hey, Boog is, I've been looking at those pictures behind you, Kev, and I've been thinking to myself, what in the hell is going on back there? But I wasn't going to say nothing. I wasn't saying that. I knew Boog couldn't pass it up for long. I don't know what kind of decor you would have to make those pictures work. That's all I'm going to say.
I have no idea either.
Yeah, that's
like. I'm not trying to stick up for this. The decor, I had nothing to do with it. All right, let's continue. All right, considering it's a good theme here, you guys are not liking the background. You think it looks bad? Well, Oregon looked terrible on Saturday night. And now they're at home, number 11 in the country. They're favored by 7 against Oregon State. Like, that's a shocker. I'm going to go with the Ducks here, laying the 7 points. Who you got, Boog?
Wow. Kev, I think it's going to be another one of those bounce back games. You know, I believe in Mario Cristobal. I'm not necessarily a believer in Anthony Brown, but I do believe in Cristobal, and I think his team will bounce back. This possibly could be the last regular season game in the career of Kayvon Thibodeau. I'm pretty sure it's going to be. He's rumored to be the number one. Well, not rumored. I think he will be the number one pick in the NFL draft next year. So I just think Oregon bounces back. I think they got too much talent on that team coming off a performance in which they were physically dominated by Utah. That can't sit well in the mouth of Mario Cristobal and everybody out there. Give me the Ducks. As long as they wear a uniform that we've seen before. Now, if they go in the bag of tricks and come out with a new uniform, all bets are off.
Oh, man. I got one guy saying eventually they're going to win. It has to bounce back and get the other guy's analysis. They wear the same uniform.
Hey, Book, 2 things here. I would like to place a wager. I don't think Thibodeau is the number 1 overall pick in the draft coming up.
Okay, I'll take that.
Okay, so we're gonna place a wager on that.
Whoa. Who do you think is? Are you just taking the field, or is there a specific guy?
I'm taking the field. I'm going to take the field. I don't know that he dominates a game. Maybe you've seen it. I've watched a lot of Oregon football games. He doesn't dominate a game. I don't know that he's number one. So I'm going to go with Oregon State in this game because they run the football. They're physical. Bouncing back from a physical butt whooping Oregon just took is hard to do, especially when you're playing another physical football team the following week. So I'm going to take Oregon State plus the 7.
Eugene's going to be rocking. Really a great environment for a rivalry where, there's a lot at stake too as well. When we're talking about the conference. Awful, awful experience though for the Pac-12 is there now out of the playoff conversation. Two more games. I'm curious to hear both your thoughts on this one before we close out with Ohio State, Michigan. Florida State at Florida, coming off the Dan Mullen firing. Who would have thought that Florida State situation is more stable than what we're seeing at Florida? And whoever wins that game becomes bowl eligible. You know, Mike Norvell deserves a ton of credit. Starting 0-4, going now 5-1. Florida laying 2.5 at the Swamp. Joey, who you got in this one?
I got Florida State. Florida has looked like a team that has literally tapped out. They don't feel like playing any longer. Florida State is still at least playing. At least they're trying to win football games. I'll take Florida State.
Boog?
Yeah, Florida showed me who they were a couple weeks ago when Samford had them by 14 and the players finally like, okay, we can't lose to Samford. And the players kind of rallied back, even though the head coach was trying to give the game away. Dan Mullen's fate was sealed when he came into this season with Todd Grantham as his defensive coordinator. Like, third and Grantham has been trending on Twitter for the last 2 years, and Dan Mullen just didn't see it. As far as this game, Florida State started off the year, played to a high level against Notre Dame, had Herbie saying, hey, I'm so proud of this team. And then they hit a lull, lost to Jacksonville State. And now Mike Norvell has this team trending back up. And if you look at the school, the schools in the state of Florida, and I'm buying stock right now, I mean, who else are you going to buy stock in besides Florida State? It's not going to be UCF, not going to be Miami, it's not going to be the Gators. So that's a long-winded way for me to say, yeah, I'll take Florida State. And also, I like where Mike Norvell is heading. And I think he may just have this job and this team going the right way when every other major school in the state of Florida seems to be going the opposite direction.
Who would have thought? After that Jacksonville State game, who would have thought that we're saying this about Mike Norvell? But those kids, they play hard, man, each and every week for them, regardless of the outcome. Florida, you shake your head and just wonder. And then their quarterback situation's a mess with so many questions about the future of Anthony Richardson. So I'm going with Florida State as well. Our final one, Ohio State laying 8.5 at the Big House against number 5, Michigan. I'm going with the Buckeyes laying the points.
Of course you are.
Who you got?
Book, who you got?
Oh, he's going with Michigan. He just wrote something down and showed his parent. He's going with Michigan. Hey,
listen, give me the Buckeyes. I'll take the team whose defense I think I can count on. And also, Joey will love this analysis. Hey, at some point, the streak has to be broken. I'm going with this weekend.
Yeah. Kev, you don't need my pick on this. You already know where I'm going. I'm happy to see that the line is only 7, to be honest with you.
Like, wait, 7? I thought it was 8.5. Hold on. Let me double check.
I thought you just said 7. What'd you just say?
I said 8.5.
Kev can't read his own writing. That's what it is.
Well, no. You just can't listen. I said 8.5.
Okay. I mean,
it's now 8 since this morning. So it's at 8. Are you taking the 8? I mean, you laying the 8?
Kev, what kind of question is that?
Yeah. Okay.
Like,
I need you to say it though.
Well, here's the thing. You know how like Boog went with LSU, even though he knew he shouldn't have. I'm going with Ohio State. Clearly, we're.
You want the points? Are you going to give the points too?
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. I would never ask for points.
Like, that's not the whole purpose of the segment.
We have a saying here in Columbus. What'd you say? The poor dog don't ask for points. That's what
No, I didn't say anything about ask for points. I said it's a poor dog that won't fight in his own backyard.
Yeah, but then you ask points. Yeah, then you get points. Look, we got a saying up here where you don't ask for points in your own backyard. Period. So, hey, look, I don't want no points. I'm going with the Buckeyes. You got LSU, and Kev got Temple. Let's go.
Is Temple playing? Are they still playing football?
Guys, it's been fantastic having you guys together here for the podcast. I'm glad we could do it on a Wednesday. Ton of topics, really good stuff. And I hope you guys have a great and safe Thanksgiving.
Yeah, you too, Kev.
Kev, happy Thanksgiving to you. And get your family out of the Motel 6, buddy. Come
Listen,
on.
Are you kidding me? I just picked Florida State. Monica wants to kick my butt. Yeah.
All of you.
There she is.
All right.
There she is. Yep.
Hey. That's my wife, Monica Nagani.
So you better duck.
Love you guys. Take care.
Later, dude. Yeah.
Big shout out to Booger and Joey. That was a lot of fun. Joey had planned that and been wanting to do that surprise Booger for a couple of weeks. And credit to Taylor for coordinating our schedules, making it happen. So a lot of fun and a lot of great topics for a very big weekend. Before we go, there are two great games on ESPN Radio this Saturday. First, you've got Virginia Tech at Virginia. Tune in at 3 p.m. Eastern for full coverage. And then after that, you've got Texas A&M at LSU, a game and a program that was widely discussed on this pod. Tune in at 6:30 p.m. Eastern time. The ESPN College Football Podcast will be back Sunday with Paul Feinbaum and Matt Berry. Those guys will be recapping a huge rivalry weekend. Don't miss it. And from all of us to all of you, have a fantastic holiday weekend and Thanksgiving with family and friends. And shout out to Taylor Schwenk once again for holding it down. Taylor, appreciate you.